The Word of Mouth podcast from NHPR is made possible with support from you, our subscribers, and from
Heinemann, a provider of resources written by real teachers for real classrooms. Heinemann values teachers as decision makers and students as curious learners. Discover the path to lifelong professional learning at Heinemann.com. Heinemann, dedicated to teachers.
You're listening to Word of Mouth.
Your questions answered.
Your state explored.
I'm Justine Paradise, here today with Taylor Quimby and Nick Capodice.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a question for you guys. So when you're having like an intense week, you just need a little peace and quiet. Where do you think is the quietest place that you can go in this city in Concord?
I sometimes sneak into a studio here at the radio station.
Oh, yeah. Here, in this very building.
Yeah, it's the only quiet place I've found in the city of Concord.
Well, we've got these nice soundproof panels and what have you on the walls.
So I would also say there's a difference between silence and quiet.
Right, because I don't necessarily just want a lack of sound. I want peaceful sound. So for me, there's some trails that I go to that, I don't know, I guess they're technically in Concord, but it's kind of outside of the city. St. Paul's has some trails around Turkey Pond that I love because it's just... there's no traffic, you know, there's you might see a heron.
Yeah.
As opposed to nature sounds, I far prefer to hear quiet where there's people involved. So like the second floor and third floor of the State House to me is beautiful because I hear muttering and rumbling and the tapping of feet.
The white noise murmur.
Yeah, I sleep with a white noise machine. I love murmuring and tapping of feet.
So I think we can agree that maybe quiet is hard to find or hard to define. So I called up this guy, Bernie Krause, who's thought about this a lot. He lives in Northern California, and he's a musician and an artist, but he also does sound design for museums and aquaria and zoos, and he's known for his work in soundscape ecology. And Bernie says that the way our environment has changed in this era of post-industrial revolution, human noise dominating the landscape, that that's really affecting us.
When the World Health Organization has done studies of urban sound and urban noise, what they found is that it introduces great amounts of stress. Glucocorticoid enzyme levels are through the roof, whether we recognize it or not, even those of us who love the sound of, you know, being in a city. Heart rate, blood pressure, all of those indicators are through the roof. So these soundscapes have a profound effect on our lives, even though we've rationalized our way to accept them because many of us have to live in urban areas.
So the United States did have an Office of Noise Abatement and Control, ONAC, but it was defunded in 1982 during the Reagan administration.
Wait, hold on. The Office of Noise Abatement and Control?
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, it was for the EPA. It was, yeah.
Well, wow.
Yeah.
Noise pollution was actual pollution.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose it still is. We just don't think about it that way.
Why is it insane? Why do you say that?
I don't know. I think noise abatement is just, it's just a funny phrase for a government agency. It's like, quiet down, people. You know, it just seems like,
hey,
a
knock
thing.
It off. Just this guy walks around the United States.
You're not saying people quiet down. You're saying factories take care of this, like, or like cars, like put mufflers on and like stuff like that.
That's fair.
So there are some like federal aircraft guidelines, largely noise is left up to cities and states. And Bernie Krause says that New England and New Hampshire specifically might be a particularly hard place to find quiet.
In New Hampshire, you're almost on a flight path at any point in time and place you can locate. So it's really hard to get away from it.
Especially in Laconia during Bike Week.
Right.
So New Hampshire as a state does not have any noise ordinances outside of vehicle muffler rules and also wind farm construction. There's some provisions there, although some cities do, like Manchester, Durham, and Nashua. Now, not everybody agrees with Bernie Krause.
The idea that we do live in a world that's too noisy is one that's actually always been there. Like since Babylonian times, it's been there.
Tower of Babel.
Stop cuneiforming so loudly.
All right, so we'll get to that. But first up on Word of Mouth today, is it possible to escape the anthropophony?
Can you escape?
Yeah, good luck.
And our very own Brita Green, NHPR's Upper Valley reporter, actually found someone on a quest to find the quietest place in the White Mountains.
I'm excited to hear it.
About a month ago, Dennis Follansbee took a hike in the Whites. He wanted to get away to find some peace and quiet. Or, as he puts it,
you know, nature sounds and not people sounds.
As he climbed out of the valley, the trickling of water from the brook below slowly faded away. The leaves rustled in the trees. But then, all of a sudden, he hit a ridge and everything changed. Little did he know, it was motorcycle week.
You feel like you're in the middle of nowhere. You're, you know, kind of pushing through the forest. And then you hear like the brrrr coming through all the way from Lincoln. You're like, man.
Today, we're retracing that hike. Follansbee's been walking these mountains for years, not just on trails, but also bushwhacking. He says he's been surprised at how far the hum of those motorcycles can carry. It's a problem because he enjoys the adventures as a meditative experience to get away from the stress of the work week. He rounds a bend. Yep. Here's a red squirrel chirping in the trees.
Can't see it.
Stop and listen, he says. This is a good spot.
Right here, it's really quiet, which is kind of what I'm going for.
Follansbee works a full-time job, gets one day a week to hike, maybe two if he's really lucky. And that's why he's been devoting himself this summer to mapping out the most isolated places acoustically so he can be really intentional about where he spends his time. What he's learning is these spots are not always where you'd expect.
Hello.
Hi.
How you doing?
As we continue on the trail, we meet a couple coming down the other direction. I describe what we're doing, looking for quiet, and one of them, Jerome Marcy from Dover, jumps in.
I would suggest West Bond.
Yeah.
That's about the most quiet mountain I've been on. I also
Follansbee smiles and nods along. They're speaking the same language.
I think people think about it, and it's usually on trails that I start to talk to people about that, and we come to the similar conclusions, like, oh yeah, this peak's not as loud as other peaks. And, you know, some peaks, you know, are just notorious for being loud.
Later, as we continue on, we run into another group. This one's notably louder than the other. As we chat, I ask Joseph Salvatore Prezioso what he's been hearing today.
A lot of birds. I hear birds chirping, the occasional fly, mosquito buzzing by my ear, and the rustling of leaves.
Turns out sound is something he thinks about quite a lot too. He lives in Boston, but he hates it, he says. All the noise drives him nuts.
I was hiking last summer down in Cannon Mountain, right? It was a great hike,
yeah. But
you hear cars the entire time. You think you're in the wilderness, but you hear a monster truck going by. Mm-hmm.
As all these guys know, finding true quiet is hard to do. The National Park Service did a big sound survey several years ago, mapping noise levels across the U.S. Follansbee's been playing with that Park Service data, trying to see if it'll help him out here. But he says their map doesn't have high enough resolution.
And doesn't really give you the detail that might be useful, because it shows that Lafayette has the same level of noise as, say, like Bond or something.
So he's making observations on the ground. And what he's learning is it can be key not only to get distance from a road, but also to be buffered by some good solid rock, a peak or a ridge, to create something of an acoustic nest for yourself. That's true even on a summit. If there are higher peaks around you, it'll be quieter than a spot at the same altitude, but with nothing around. This calculation can be tricky, though, because the Whites are crisscrossed by highways, Interstate 93 up the western edge, 302 down the middle, 2 to the north, plus the Kankamangus, and of course, the Cog Railway, going up the side of Mount Washington. But even the quest itself has been eye-opening for Follansbee. The more he's been listening, the more he hears.
So there's no chickadees here now.
We stop in a birch glen, the sun shining through the leaves.
But if I hear one, and we stay quiet for like 30 seconds, I'm not kidding you, I can summon like 20 chickadees.
You just have to make a certain sound, he says.
Like a little squeak sound, like... And then all of a sudden you'll hear one sort of like a flutter in, and it'll start talking to you, kind of turning its head, and then it might fly away and then bring back a friend. And then all of a sudden I've had probably, I counted like 12 around me once, and like this orchestra of chickadee songs.
He's tried doing this with other people around, but it never works, and no one believes him, he says. He sighs and keeps walking up the trail. For NHPR News, I'm Brita Green.
That was Brita Green, NHPR's Upper Valley reporter, who also covers Western New Hampshire. Now, the quest for quiet is a beautiful thing. But what about those of us who spend our lives in towns and cities? Are we doomed to a life of stress and noise?
I have a cat here. Hold on a minute.
Okay. Well, my name is Robin Palmer, and I'm a sound artist and researcher based in Ireland. I've been living here for 20 years after growing up in Canada.
I called Robin because he approaches the sound of our environments primarily as an artist. He's a composer, creates sound installations, and writes music for dance and film. He also studies field recordings, sound recorded not in a studio, but out in the world.
So, for example, on one of my albums, I have a recording I made in the street of street cleaning machinery, the sort of thing that most people would consider just obnoxious. It's a big, continuous, noisy drone. But I could also hear the echoes of it back off the building. I had my recorder handy, as I often do, so I was able just to go hit record. And I sort of created a composition by moving myself relative to the sound generating machine and relative to the buildings.
This idea of the urban environment being, you know, louder and louder and like worse and worse, you're kind of saying you don't know if you, like, you kind of dismiss that idea that it's just evil or that it's just bad.
I do. I just dismiss that idea. Some of the earliest writings that we have from cultures around the world are complaining about noise. So I don't think it's a new phenomenon at all. And I think it's something that we always crave, the, you know, the snowy mountaintop or the deep valley or the abandoned seaside where we can experience quiet.
Rather than seeking the quiet of a mountain valley, Robin is interested in ways to connect, express, and be surprised by the sounds and silences that occur around us in daily life. He talks a lot about what's called a soundscape, a term that was coined, although perhaps not invented, by the Canadian composer R. Murray Schafer. He's 85 years old now, and here he's speaking in a 2009 video produced by the National Film Board of Canada.
In a way, the world is a huge composition, a huge musical composition that's going on all the time, without a beginning and presumably without an ending. We are the composers of this huge, miraculous composition that's going on around us. And we can improve it, or we can destroy it. We can add more noises, or we can add more beautiful sounds. It's all up to us.
Right. Well, what is a soundscape then?
It's basically anything you hear. But it's approached in two different ways, predominantly. One is a compositional approach. So listening to the everyday sounds of life as a composition. The act of listening sort of turns you into a composer. You choose what to focus on, what to filter out. And the other aspect would be sort of more of an investigative aspect of going out, recording sounds, listening to sounds, notating sounds, graphing sounds, mapping sounds, all of these sorts of perhaps more scientific ways of approaching it, but which also can really inform the way that you might listen in future.
Wrapped up in the concept of the soundscape is the idea that the voices of ordinary people and life on the streets and in markets and in shops, that all that is valuable. And what's ordinary to you in a single moment can one day, just within your life, become very special. But it can also even become of historical interest.
It does act as a time capsule because, I mean, if you think about it, like, we've only been able to record our world, like the audio part, and play it back for a fairly short amount of time, like, you know, a bit over 100 years. But that hasn't been accessible to most people until the last 30, 40 years. So there's a lot that we can't hear anymore.
But paying attention to the soundscape around you doesn't just mean recording it. The senses of the human body are actually much finer instruments in many ways than a microphone.
There's the cocktail party effect where, I'm not sure anyone has cocktail parties anymore, But the idea that if you're at a party with 50 people speaking, you can actually single out one conversation from across the room, which is quite a skill. And it involves more than just your sense of hearing, actually. It involves, you know, like your sense of sight and other things. And it's, in particular, it's something a microphone cannot do. So that's one reason that when we listen back to a recording of an environment like that with a lot of noise and hubbub, it's going to sound pretty bad. Like, we're not going to be able to discern very much from it. But when we were there making the recording, we could hear things quite clearly. So that's kind of interesting in terms of psychoacoustics and how we can pick up on different things in the environment.
That's really fascinating, too. Just, I mean, this idea even of separating the senses into sound and taste and touch being and sight being kind of something like you're hearing your entire body being the instrument.
Yes, that's something I'm very keen on stressing in a lot of my research, because hearing is certainly done with the whole body. That's why people go to, like, you know, loud dance concerts or something, you know. Well, there's various reasons people might go to a concert. Some of them are, some of them are social reasons. But the musical reason is full of physicality. I mean, if you're at a concert with, you know, giant bass bins and a big sound system, you feel that sound in your gut. And as heavy metal dudes say, you know, they want that trouser flapping sound. So sound is very physical. And also, we definitely use vision to hear.
Robin recommends a few different exercises to explore the nature of sound, and a few that you can try yourself at home. The first is a blindfold walk.
It's good with a partner, and the experience is different for everybody because some people get quite afraid, I have to say, even terrified, because they're just not used to being blind. But what you'll notice, or what I've noticed, is that you can tell an awful lot about your environment without your eyes, without any practice. So if you walk past a wall, you can tell if there's brick next to you or where there's a window. You can tell how much space there is above you, approximately. I mean, all of these things. You can even tell if you're about to walk into a pole or something. We have those senses. And certainly if you were born without eyesight or if that condition developed, I'm quite sure that, you know, the sense would be enhanced to a certain degree. But the point I like to make is that we all have those abilities. We just don't know it because we're not practiced in them and we don't test ourselves to find out, can we do it? Can we walk through a room blindfolded?
And second, again, is directing special focus to the soundscape around you.
Well, I mean, it doesn't need to have this big word art over it, I suppose, either. I mean, for me, it's a very practical, embodied, day-to-day pursuit. The sound and the images and everything, I mean, if you pay some heed to them, you realize you're living in a very rich environment. And it can really, for people who do have issues with noise, do have things about their environment they dislike, it can give you another window onto that. If you start recording your environment, you might find that you really like it.
So I decided to try it. We've got a professional field recording kit here at the station, but I remembered the project as I was walking home from a friend's house one day, and I didn't have it. So I just took out my phone and hit record on the voice memo app. A sprinkler landing on the garden, on the hostel leaves, in the yard I walk by. Interrupted by a lot of construction sounds and motorcycles going by. And I also sent out invitations to friends to send me sounds of their days.
Being in the city feels like it's all about transportation sounds. Right now I'm walking my bike up my street.
And I have to say, I found that hearing these daily sounds was a really cool way to feel close to faraway friends, to be brought along as people make coffee, work in the garden, talk to their babies, come home from work. And Robin told me this is actually a rather old idea.
I mean, back when cassette recorders first were available on the mass market, there were tape clubs where people would record either stuff from their environment or sort of audio letters. and send them off to other people. And in some places, for example, in the UK, there was an entire network of tape clubs who would record stuff from their everyday life and then send it to people living in other cities and exchange tapes. So some of these ideas are not necessarily new. They're mostly play, but then later on you might find that they've served some other function without you knowing it. Like today we can go back to the tapes that the clubs made, and that is an interesting social and historical archive.
So here's some moments, quiet and loud, from some of the people I happen to know.
You're riding home with me on the train. It's late. It's pretty late. People are pretty tired. It's a Monday night. And normally the train driver will announce the next station. He's not doing that. Maybe he doesn't feel like it tonight. That's all right. Just hearing, what am I hearing? The rumble. We're in a tunnel. Some murmuring, some bit of chatter around me. People on phones, people yawning, people rummaging in bags, coughing. And the train sounds themselves, the doors opening and closing, and the whistle of the train guard.
Okay. Tucson streets have some of the biggest potholes and cracks.
Summer thunderstorm, waiting in my car after picking up my flower CSA.
There are so many sounds as the planes pass overhead, and the birds tweet, and the Lewis bell dings in the far background. It's actually really quite pleasant and quite peaceful here in the middle of city centre in Dublin.
All right, we are arriving at Ferry Beach in Scarborough, Maine.
Scarborough, Maine.
So, I've saved some of my favorite recordings for last here. Up next, this is my friend Lindsay talking to her baby Penelope. You can actually hear Penelope, who's almost 2 years old, in the middle of learning new words.
I just folded up a big piece of greenhouse plastic, and Penelope was helping me.
Helping.
Helping?
Helping.
That's what you're saying. Helping. Yeah. You were helping me. That's right.
A piece of
You were helping me with this piece of greenhouse plastic. That's right. You were helping me fold up the big piece of greenhouse plastic. Yes, this is greenhouse plastic. We're gonna keep it folded up though. That was really fun though. the way you were helping.
And this last one is my dad, at the harbor on Nantucket Island, where I grew up and where my family still lives. These sounds are so familiar and evocative for me. It's honestly a little emotional to hear that buoy bell clanging in the background. And then in just a second here, you'll hear a blast from the ferry horn, which announces to the world that it's pulling away from the dock, headed out to sea. And it's interrupted here by sirens. What this recording is saying to me is that my dad wanted to help me on this project, and he made time in the busy summer season to go down to the beach right when the ferry was leaving the dock. He timed it perfectly. But he was foiled by the sirens, which are a signal that times are changing on the island as it gets more and more crowded and busier every year. This recording seems to demonstrate both care and chaos in the same moment. So now it's your turn. We want to hear the sounds of New Hampshire across the state, from the beautiful to the annoying.
Well, the only problem is we always hate the sound of our voice, don't we, on recorders? Like,
Yeah, that's people say that to me all the time. You know, I would do that, except I hate the sound of my voice. Do people say that to you? What do you say to them?
Well, we're all the same. Everybody agrees. It's entirely normal to feel that way about it, because we hear our own voice through our bodies, right? It's this huge, rich sound because it's, you know, every bone in our head and our chests and everything are all reverberating. So we always hear a voice as this rich experience. And then when we hear it back on a tape recorder or off our phone, it sounds thin and reedy and insignificant. So one has to, you have to do it enough times, I think, to get over that fact. Eventually you do get over that.
So here are the instructions I sent to my friends when I asked them to record. You can just use a smartphone recording app, although if you have recording gear, you'd obviously be welcome to use that too. And you can narrate a little, but leave lots of room for the sounds in isolation as well. Use the phone like a microphone, pointed at the sound you're trying to get. The recording should not be longer than 10 minutes or so, or a few 2-minute recordings from within a single day, because if it gets longer than that, they'll get too big to email. It's just too challenging. Then email them to us at wordofmouth@nhpr.org. And one important note here is to please be sure that anyone you record knows they are being recorded, with the exception of obvious public spaces where individual voices aren't easily identifiable. No one should be surprised to hear their voice featured on the radio. All of these instructions will also be at wordofmouthradio.org on the show post for this episode. And thanks.
All right, that's it. That's some of my train trip home from Central Station to Arncliffe in Sydney, Australia.
Jackie, do you want to do the credits with me this week?
Sure.
Great. Word of Mouth was produced this week by me, Justine Paradise.
And me, Jackie Halbert, with Taylor Quimby, Nick Capodice, Ben Henry, Hannah McCarthy, Brita Green, and Corey Princell.
Our executive producer is Erica Janik. Maureen McMurray is the flower crown a llama could wear to a wedding.
Music in this episode from Poddington Bear, Ryan Little,
Ikemashu Aoi, Kevin McLeod, Prasanna LaAve, and the Polish ambassador. Again, send us your soundscapes. The instructions will be in the web post for this episode at wordofmouthradio.org. And thank you to everyone who contributed their soundscapes already. And get ready for this, because we're thanking everyone.
Our own Jimmy Gutierrez,
Sarah Mashman and Mike Williams in Sydney, Australia,
Kira Gillen in Dublin, Olivia May in Boston,
Lindsay and Penelope Pishwaro in Oregon, Rachel Bornay in Little Rock, Arkansas,
Christina Cololo and Martha Schnee in Maine,
Melanie Risch in North Carolina,
Addie Provenzano in Tucson, Arizona, Brian Chittister in Boston,
and my dad, Steve Paradise on Nantucket Island. Thank you so much.
Word of Mouth is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio.
Nick, can you give us an example of incoherent and chaotic sound?
Can you do the internet sound?
That one?